The person is operating out of habits that in some way worked for them. You know, there's a kind of behavior, I'm sure you know, it's called avoidance behavior. I'll give you an example of it. In 1942, in the Journal of Experimental Psychology, Solomon and Wynne reported, you all read it, I'm sure, they have a thing called a shuttle box. It has a little fence in it, and there's two sides, and there's a little light on each side, and then the floor can create a shock. So they put a dog in this thing. They turn the light on, and the dog has no idea. It gets a shock a few seconds later, jumps around until it jumps over the fence and finds out, oh, it's not shocking on this side. So it hangs out there, and then the light goes on over there, and it gets another, until it learns, jump. Every time you see the light, before you get shocked. Okay. I don't know how many trials, after 40 trials or something like that, they turn off the shock. But the dog continues to jump forever. Avoidance behavior. Avoidance behavior is its own reward. You know, if you avoid something, even if it was not going to happen, you feel better. You get rewarded. So that a lot of our behaviors are those kind of behaviors. We had some situations in our youth and maybe your, and we learned to jump. Huh? We learned to avoid something like taking in certain kinds of nourishment. And then even though there's no shock, there's no violence, there's plenty of opportunities to get what you wanted in the first place, keep jumping. Keep jumping forever. Now, there's two ways to get the dog to stop jumping. One way, a little violent, you put the gate up so the dog can't jump. It freaks out until it realizes, wait a minute, no shock. But it really freaks out for a while. The other way, you turn the light on so slowly that the dog never jumps. And now it's sitting there with the light on and it hasn't jumped. So there must be a very gentle way to bring people to the place where they don't make that kind of jump. They don't avoid something. They don't run from. And it's not conscious. It's habitual. It's a certain thing you do with your body or your mind, your thoughts. Don't believe that. Don't trust that. Or you just get tense or something. So when you approach people with the intention of offering them nourishment that they haven't been able to take in before, gentle, okay? Very, very gentle. Solomon and Wynne, 1942, Journal of Experimental Psychology. It's the only one I remember.
When you're working with each other, and this is just a reminder for some of you, but a little bit of an explanation, and you recognize what comes up on automatic, you know, what the impulse is. Like Anne, you know, you saying, I want to run away. Part of the method is to have somebody be a voice telling you that. You might not hear it as a voice. You might feel it as a bodily reaction. But when you describe it, your partners can figure out, well, if I was going to be the part of your mind telling you that to do that, so you can listen to it. We slow it down and you get a chance to have a little distance from it and hear it as an actual directive. It creates the possibility of getting more information about it, but also of having a little space around it and in that space finding other possibilities. So the person might say, you know, I feel frozen. You can have a voice that says, freeze, freeze. Don't move.
Don't make a sound.
And it's a soft voice. It's usually soft, and sometimes a person will say it needs to be more harsh or it needs to be this. But usually just start off with the message. You know, don't get into over-dramatizing it unless the person specifically asks for a particular way of hearing it that sounds like how they experience it inside. And it's an interesting part of this method of having somebody else take over something that's happening, usually outside of consciousness, inside you, so that you can study it and learn something about it and find space around it and maybe find another possibility. It's always moving in the direction of what's needed. So even if it doesn't turn up as a voice, as words, you can turn the reaction that the person is feeling into words and have somebody take it over as a voice. Poetry and Sayings of Adyashanti. And she had turned down the page at this one. I will not whisper. I want to speak to you about love, about how you deny yourself its slightest entry, about how much you truly fear love's silent embrace. I want to talk to you about what you will not allow yourself to see, about that beauty inside that you turn your face from. Yes, I want to talk to you. You who have somehow found a way to hide within a sliver of darkness cast upon the pure light of being. I want to talk to you. I will not whisper. You can live in that sliver of darkness forever and tell yourself lies. You can blame yourself. You can blame others. You can blame God and beyond. And still, that love that you are will wait until you can tell yourself the lie of denial no more. And at that very moment, you will see just how silent love's embrace can be. And in that silence, the truth will ring clear. Love demands everything, all of your illusions, excuses, and fears. I want to speak to you about love. I want to talk to you about what you will not allow yourself to be. I want to talk to you. I will not whisper.